Welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. We will now introduce our speaker, a member who has had at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Please help me welcome Richard M., a compulsive overeater from Toronto. Thanks, Richard.
All right, thanks for the intro. I'm Richard M. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'd like to talk about three things today, so I'd like to go through what my experience was like as a hopeless compulsive overeater that got me into the rooms. The second thing is, what were my experiences like about learning about the solution that was in the Big Book? Third thing was, once I started to learn what the solution could be, my experience of committing myself to doing the work of the 12 steps that are in the Big Book, that's led me to the recovery that I'm very grateful to have day by day today. First, when I say that I'm a hopeless compulsive overeater, what that experience was like, I had a very hard time understanding what that, that I was a hopeless compulsive overeater. I knew there was things wrong. I couldn't really put my finger on it. It's not an easy problem to talk to people about, and it's an even easier problem to lie yourself about. When I came into the rooms later, I started to be able to piece together more of the things I wasn't fully honest with myself about. So there were certain behaviors, lying about food, stealing food from people who you care about, eating until you hurt yourself over and over again, but then just kind of pushing it below the conscious radar and because it becomes so normal, you don't see it. Some of the examples, a couple of things that I remember, and I remember them better now, honestly, having gone through the program than I did before I entered the program. So, one was I used to binge on cereal. I couldn't keep it around the house, but I would have these big bowls of cereal that were so filled with, I'd get a big bowl of cereal and I'd eat the whole thing and I'd go back and keep on eating more and more of them until I'd been through several bags of milk and maybe the whole box of cereal. And you start to get so full that you, you're in physical pain, like your body can't fill yourself with anything more inside of it, but still going and continue to eat and being in that kind of horrible pain and, trying to figure out, do I purge, do I stop, do I throw stuff out, but not being sure what to do anymore. I had another experience, and this one, this was a scary one, but I remember, just wanting something, wanting anything to eat, wanting cookies, and then going into my kitchen and taking a stick of butter and a bunch of raw sugar and mixing them together in a bowl. And sitting there and melting it down and then eating with a spoon and then going back and repeating the process maybe like 6 or 7 times in an evening. It's really scary stuff, right? Because you start to go like, what's wrong with me? What am I doing? And you can't even fully understand it because people don't talk about this kind of behavior in a normal place. Part of why I didn't understand that I was a compulsive overeater and that I was hopeless is that there's this delusion that you can control it. Right, that there's parts of it that are controllable. And for me, I'm in my kind of mid-30s now. And so for 15, maybe 20 years, I went up and down 50 to 100 pounds, maybe 5 or 6 times. And so when I had that kind of experience where I say, oh, I can grin down and bear it and I can do something about this, you think you can control it. You just think you got to get things right and other things are the cause that do it. But truthfully, about 2 years ago, it started to get to the point where I couldn't do that anymore. And I couldn't figure out what that was. And that was very scary. To think, you have this high opinion of yourself and what you can do and how you can control things. But to say, have loved ones sit there and say, well, have you tried writing down everything you're eating? Have you tried and saying, no, I don't know. I can't do that. I could hold down a job. I could do other things, but I couldn't do this really simple task. It was very confusing. And over time, it was causing damage to my self-esteem and it was causing damage to my health. And I hit 310 pounds in weight. And at that weight, you don't have much of a life. You start to you know, you have a lot of aches and physical pains and you're not getting outside of the house, but it just starts to become normal. And I honestly had no idea. I tried, you know, I tried Weight Watchers, I tried everything online, I tried all sorts of crash diets and things, and I couldn't even figure out what it was. And, you know, ultimately, I couldn't even understand what was wrong with me until I got into the rooms. And so the question is, what kind of got me into the rooms, really? For me, it was that I didn't feel, I felt hopeless around. I was starting to lose faith that I couldn't manage things in other areas of my life. You know, that same feeling of like, oh, I can't control this, I can't control that. And I remember in the couple months before I ended up in the rooms, I was getting so angry and I was getting isolated and I was bitter at everyone and everything. And I just didn't see a path forward, like, in any part of my life anymore. I wasn't suicidal, but I, you know, I couldn't articulate how things were going to get better. And so I was open to it myself, to do something spiritual. I just didn't know what that would look like at that stage. So that was my experience of being a compulsive overeater before getting into the rooms. So that was the second thing, my experience about being, learning that there's a solution in the big book to this problem. So I got in the rooms and I didn't want to go. I didn't want to be in there, but I started trying to go once a week or twice a week. And the best piece of advice that I got were go to lots of different meetings, talk to a bunch of different people, see what worked for them. And the other really great piece of advice was, don't just look for meetings where people are having a hard time. Yes, we're here to help each other. There's always going to be people having a hard time, but look for people who are recovered. Look for people who had strong recovery, find them, talk to them and say, what did you do that worked? Right? Because ultimately we're not here because we want to be in this problem. We want to be out of it. So what do these people do? So for me, that was really helpful and it helped me figure out one or two, a meeting to be in a home meeting, to kind of be a regular meeting, get to know people. And there they would talk, this was a big book focused meeting. And a lot of the meetings I noticed that were stronger were big book focused. And a lot of the people who I talked to who had really good recovery had a big book focused recovery. So that was just, there seemed to be something there. And I would sit there and listen to them and they would read parts of the big book and they'd talk about it. And they would make it simple. They'd say, here's the problem and here's the solution. So what's the problem? First, there's a physical allergy. Is that us who are compulsive overeaters, there are certain things, substances, times, circumstances, that when we are in these circumstances, something goes wrong with us and we can't help ourselves. We just keep going. We just can't stop. And at that point, it's totally beyond the will. It's beyond anything that we can do. And and that, you know, some of us, we can become aware of what some of that allergy is for us. But part of the problem for us is we don't understand the boundaries of this allergy. It's not like, so with alcoholism, people say it's alcohol, get rid of alcohol. With food, we need food in our life. So that we understand that the allergy is caused by something about food and the way we eat. We have to figure that out. The second thing they talk about in the problem is the mental problem, that we could swear off, you know, say we know it's just sugar. We could swear off sugar, say never again, and we're still going to ultimately find our way back to it. And that's part of the scary part and why we realize we can't trust ourselves anymore about this, is that there's this mental problem that we have, this blind spot that we keep going back to. And that's the part that when I started to hear that, I started to get, you know, understand the real fear, like the real, like, this is a scary problem. I start to think about it a bit more. Because some of the people I talked to, they would also say, and this is in the big book, this is a permanent, progressive, and fatal disease. It does not get better. It just gets worse. It doesn't go away, but you can get it into remission and you can deal with it. And the last thing about the problem, which really spoke to me a lot, and it felt intuitively right, but I didn't know what to do about it, was they said that ultimately this is a spiritual problem. Yeah, we have a physical allergy. Yes, we have a mental blind spot, but there's a spiritual problem. There's something wrong in our spiritual life that it's really the root cause of all this. You know, some people might debate that. I don't know the answer to it. That's how I understood it. So that's the problem, physical allergy, the mental blind spot, there's ultimately a spiritual problem. This is permanent, progressive, and fatal. So what's the solution that I would hear in the rooms that were big book focused? The solution was, first, you had to put down the food. It was entire abstinence. One thing you hear in some rooms, some people talk about, you know, oh, I had a slip. I'm absent, but I had this slip. In my recovery and the people that I've talked to, you know, who have had good recovery, I'm not saying this is the only right way to do things. There's been a focus on, okay, you're either abstinence or you're not. If you're having slips, you're not abstinent. And they're not doing this to try and penalize people. You know, the idea is that when we're in the food, we can't work the steps. We can't have the spiritual solution. So we have to put the food down first. Otherwise, the solution doesn't work. So that's the first part of the solution, is putting down the food and entire abstinence. The next thing in the solution is that we lack the power to fix this thing ourselves. Having just explained the problem, I think it probably makes sense. And for me, you know, as a logical, trying to look at it logically, it's like, oh yeah, if that's the problem, of course I can't fix it myself if I have this mental blind spot. The next thing in the solution after entire abstinence and putting down and lacking the power to do ourselves is that if we're willing to trust a power greater than ourselves, and be right with that power, whatever that is, then that power can help where we don't have the power to fix ourselves. That was a revolutionary idea in a lot of different ways. And I could read the words in the steps, but I didn't fully understand it until I worked the steps. And so I'll come back to that, but it's that seeing the power as being bigger than you is really important, and that it wants to help. And then the last thing in the solution, which is really important for me in helping me the faith to try, to even just try and go forward, was to believe the solution was real, and to see by looking around the rooms and seeing people that had strong recovery and saying, this is what they'd done. And saying, okay, well, because often, you know, I'll have my days where I'll say, God, I don't know how to talk to you. I'm not sure what to do today. God, I don't know if I can trust you today. Right. And going back through it. And one of the things that always seems to anchor me is like, okay, look, I've talked to this recovered person who I respect and trust. I talked to this recovered person who I respect and trust. And all of them, I believe them that this was the path they took and this is the work they did. So then shouldn't I be willing to try that? That was very important for me, that others had done it and they'd done it by following the steps in the book. So that was my experience that made me want to pursue the solution. I was coming to learn what the nature of the problem was, what the nature of the solution was, and trying to get the strong meetings. From there, that knowing that there is a solution, that's not the same thing as doing the work to find the solution. And that wasn't easy. I think that probably took me a month or two of sitting there and going to meetings and talking to people and starting to think there was a solution that might work, but still not being willing to do it, like not being ready to do it. I was very afraid. Why was I afraid? I think I was afraid of, I'd gotten over the hump of going to meetings and sharing, but I was afraid of, you know, picking the wrong sponsor. I was afraid of being vulnerable with a sponsor and it not working. And ultimately I had to say, okay, I even asked some people in the fellowship about it, and they said, yeah, sometimes people switch their sponsors. Sometimes it doesn't work. You know, you just got to try, right? You got to go ahead with it. So I found a sponsor that I hoped was going to be a good fit, and I found a time to start. For me, what was really helpful with my sponsor was they helped me understand what my relationship was going to be to this person. My sponsor was very clear. They said, I'm not God. I don't have this answer. I'm someone who got better with the big book. Once we are finished working the steps, you're no longer going to even need me day to day. I'll just be another fellow, someone you can talk to about this. So he set the expectation with me that all of his recovery had come from the big book. And so I'm not placing my faith in him. I'm placing my faith in that. I'm learning how he got access to the big book. That's it, through it. So he's a teacher. He was a guide. Then he wasn't God. And I found that really helpful, because there's a lot of, you know, because it's such a vulnerable relationship with a sponsor, it's important to try and figure out some of the boundaries that made sense there. What was the first thing that we had to focus on? So we went back, what I say that I learned what the solution was. The first solution was entire absence, putting the food down. I didn't know how to do it. I was terrified of this, because I couldn't figure out where, what the cause of the physical allergy was for me. I had all sorts of ideas of, oh, maybe is it wheat? Is it sugar? Is it, you know, raisins? And I had all these ideas and all these foods that seemed like I couldn't touch them anymore. And I was just, I was honestly just scared of my mind. I was honestly afraid to go into a grocery store. And a good sponsor, not every sponsor, I think, wants to do this work, but some good sponsors will be able to help people figure out what their allergies are without being like being overly prescriptive for people. And so for me, you know, my sponsor helped me come up with a plan of eating, and he talked, you know, he helped me problem solve through it. And he never told me what my allergy was. It just, I would say, I seem to have problems in this situation. So I seem to have problems in this situation. And he'd say, looks like you probably have a problem with sugar. You would know, not me. You would know if that's true. One thing that he pushed me on, which I didn't want to hear because it, I didn't want to do the work, but the truth was that I got a problem with the volume. I want to keep eating, and I wanted to eat in between meals, and I didn't want to ever have to restrict myself. And but I mean, I talked to other, I talked to fellows, and their experience, some of them, their experience was, yeah, they have to weigh and measure all their food, and they have to, they only eat three meals a day. And I didn't want to do it, but I was willing to try, right? I was willing to try at that stage because I had no idea what to do. And thankfully my sponsor and other fellows, because they had tried and failed so many times, they helped me make it simple, right? Because it's not easy to, food's complicated. There's all these different dimensions about it, and helped me come up with a plan of eating that did work. So once I got the food down, and that wasn't easy. I literally I went to a friend's house who was out of town. I got all the food out of their house. And I had to just let, like, every day start from scratch, right? Make everything from scratch. You know, it wasn't working that week. Only focusing on getting the food down, and you know, starting a routine of getting division for you every morning and calling fellows every morning, just because this is all stuff my sponsor's recommending. Because that wasn't easy, right? I didn't know how to, I was in on uncertain territory of how could I even just eat three meals a day. So I didn't think that was possible. Honestly, once that started to take, even just a little temporarily, that was the first real excitement that I had. Oh my goodness, maybe there's something behind this, right? Like maybe this has the possibility of working. So then we started working the steps because the food was down. Kind of breaking that into three parts. So the first part was, you know, steps one through three. For me, this was trusting God long enough just to work the steps. I didn't have a problem with God. I was okay with, you know, there can be a God in the world and they can be great and I don't have to worry about it. It was trusting that I could give my life to God and I didn't have to control everything for myself. That was the revolution for me. And even when I got through steps one through three, I didn't think that I had that. I wasn't sold 100%. I was just sold long enough to get the steps done on that piece. Because that was such a revolutionary concept that I could be safe giving up control to something that wasn't another person or another institution or something. From there, we were focused on steps four through nine of trying to get right by a higher power. So identifying all the angers, fears, remorses, the selfishness, dishonesties, or places of trying to control life that would, as long as I'm stuck in those, as long as I'm stuck in anger and bitterness and trying to control, God will let me go in circles and let me do it all on my own. And that took some work, but it made sense, at least. I think I was lucky to have a good sponsor going through that stuff who could help me focus it, but still help me be thorough and deal with everything. And honestly, by the time I got through step nine, I was feeling great. I mean, I did not lose my abstinence, but I had a real rough point in my step nine. And that's, I know that happens to a lot of people in either their steps four or their steps nine that they find it very challenging. And then the last bit was trying to build a new foundation to stay, you know, connected to God every day. So the steps 10, 11, and 12, working on building a routine of prayer and giving up control every day, or how to be of service to others. And honestly, that's where I focus on. I mean, I don't worry about the food that much. I'm still, it's the things that I've been practicing and learning there. And I find the 10, 11, 12 much harder than the food still. So just to wrap this up. So for me, I've been in the meetings for just over 10 months. I've been recovered for eight. So I've been abstinent for eight and I've been recovered for about 4 months at this stage. I'm still, there still are hard days where I'm kind of having to reset all my expectations about life with God all over again. That doesn't really stop, but there's some gratifying work that comes out of it through it. I lost 65 pounds. I'm not honestly been focused on it. It's been the easiest 65 pounds I've ever lost. The positive stuff has been that I'm just not as angry as I used to be. I'm not as controlling as I used to be. A lot of my relationships are better in life. And that's the stuff that, that's what keeps me focused on the value of the program, is that impact on my emotional and spiritual life. Otherwise, I don't want to keep doing the work. I want to look for an easier solution. So that's my story of my experience of being a hopeless compulsive overeater, my experience of learning the solution and then doing the work. So if I'm all done for sharing and we can do questions or whatever's next.